This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 WILL Urbana. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. In this portion of the show, stories, state and local stories. We'll take a look at our state's history and the history of East Central Illinois. I invite your calls, listeners, for two guests with lifelong interests in the stories of our region, newspaperman Tom Kasich and retired teacher Stu Fleege. Stu is a retired math and science teacher, and he's the author of Tales and Trails of Illinois. Tom is the editorial page editor of the News Gazette, and he is the author of Hot Type, 150 Years of the Best Local Stories from the News Gazette. I invite your questions about the history of Illinois and East Central Illinois. Join us with a telephone call. Here are the numbers. In the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, if it would be a long-distance call, use the toll-free number. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Tom, thanks for joining us this afternoon. Tom's with me in the studio, and Stu Fleege is on the phone with us from Springfield. Stu, good afternoon. Hi.
I'm here. Glad to be here. Glad to help.
Oh, my pleasure to talk with the two of you. A question for both of you. Do you recall what sparked your interest in state and local history?
Well, I can go first if you like.
Sure.
I was a student in Carbondale in southern Illinois, and I really didn't care much about it until we started roaming in southern Illinois, and southern Illinois is quite a bit different, you know, the unglaciated hills down there, and I fell in love with it. And two books by a guy named John Allen, and he is almost a legendary historian in southern Illinois, and they're filled with these little-known stories, you know, and I read them, and I became kind of infatuated with them. And then a few years later, the Outdoor Illinois magazine with all kinds of good stories, and over the years, my interest just grew, but that's how it started.
Okay, Tom?
Mine is somewhat similar. I can remember back in fourth grade, we were required in fourth grade in the Chicago area to take a Chicago history course all the way through the entire year. And I thought, well, it was so cool to read about Chicago history and the fire and why the flag looks the way it does. And so I got an interest then in local history, and it's followed me wherever I've moved to. When we lived in Springfield, or when we lived in Champaign-Urbana, I've always been interested in why things became the way they are.
Yeah, and for both of you, I would imagine that these books have been, you know, labors of love. They're a lot of fun to read. There's a lot of just wonderful history here. And I think, as John Foreman said in the introduction to Hot Type, I think it's like flesh and blood stories. You know, these are people stories.
Yeah, these are newspaper stories, and they're generally just events. It's not something that although in a couple of cases it's something that evolved over 10 or 15 years. But it's the way a newspaper would cover a story and report it quickly and then get on to the next story.
Yeah. Stu?
Yes. Well, I'm not so sure that there are local stories of such. In fact, they were never covered by the newspaper. Some of them happened before Illinois was a state, and newspapers were non-existent.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've just always been an Illinois history buff and put these tales together and put them out, but it's definitely a labor of love. That's all it was. Just collecting over the years, a lot of fun. And then what the really fun part is the research and then traveling around the state with my wife, taking pictures, going to local county historical societies, visiting local libraries, that type of thing. Just a lot of fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And both books contain lots of great pictures, wonderful pictures. Tom, would you explain the title of your book, Hot Type, and give us some sense of, you know, what that means, what that was once upon a time?
The gist of the book is to celebrate the 150th anniversary of the first newspaper in Champaign-Urbana and the stories of the last 150 years. And, you know, in the old days, newspapers were printed basically with hot type that was molded from hot metal to form characters, and that's where the title comes from. But it also comes from the idea that these are hot stories fresh off the press and you know, of interest to people.
What was this part of the world like when in 1852 the county's first newspaper opened?
It was desolate. And in fact, this was one of the last parts of Illinois settled. In fact, the last two counties formed in Illinois or in East Central Illinois, Douglas County and Ford County. This was very wet, marshy area. There were very few settlements. It was disease ridden. It was awful. You know, it was not
really
a good place
miserable,
to live.
Miserable.
But the railroad and drainage changed all that.
Yeah. Now, Stu, as you mentioned, your book goes back before there were newspapers, before in the state, before we were a state. Would you tell us a little bit something about what it's like to go back that far and try and do research on this?
Well, some of them, of course, have to do with Native Americans, and I'm not an archaeologist, but I do read what the archaeologists have put out, what they've published, and have become fascinated with their stories. And, of course, even with the first Europeans, Joliet and Marquette, as they came down the Mississippi River, were, you know, a long time before Illinois became a state. Even, for example, the history of the first coal mine in Illinois, 1810. Well, that's 8 years before Illinois became a state, long before there were any newspapers around.
Yeah. You mentioned coal. Salt was really important.
Yes, it was. You know, in today's world, salt is ultra cheap. You know, we get a slight snowfall, we pump tons of it down on our highways. But not too long ago, it was a very, very precious commodity. In the old days, they were actually paid in salt. You know, that's where the word salary comes from. And here in Illinois, down around the Equality area, they had some pretty big salt mines, mined first of all by the Native Americans, and then after the French took control for a short while, they were mined by the French and eventually became part of the United States government. And what's unique about that, it was the one place in Illinois where the Constitution, the Illinois Constitution, permitted slave labor here in the state of Illinois.
That's something. Tom, you mentioned this part of the world being, you know, marshy, mucky, miserable in the 19th century. At what point in time did the land in this part of the state get cleared, drained, and tiled? And tell us about that.
The tiling started around the 1880s, and it was a process that basically took about 20 years in this part of the world. And it was just the formation, the idea that you could drain the land and it would be very valuable once it was freed of all the, you know, the muck. And then came the formation of drainage districts, which made it much easier to clear land and to do it, you know, cooperatively with among other farmers. So that, you know, that was the key to the development of great agricultural land we have here.
Yeah, very interesting. And back to salt and slavery. Stu, would you tell us about Elijah Lovejoy?
Elijah Lovejoy was one of the foremost abolitionists in the state of Illinois. He went to Missouri first. Well, Missouri, of course, was a slave state before the Civil War, and he thought he would come into Illinois and be able to publish his abolitionist views freely. Well, he was very mistaken. The people in Alton, Illinois at the time were still very much in favor of slavery, and they eventually executed Elijah Lovejoy. But the Lovejoy story, in my opinion, is one of history's best examples where a murder or a horrible event to thwart a movement actually propels the movement, in this case, the abolitionist movement. When he was murdered, it aroused, and the entire nation became outraged that he would be murdered simply for expressing his anti-slavery views, and went a long way toward establishing the mindset of the nation before, you know, 20 years before the Civil War.
Anything like that story in the history of the News Gazette?
Yeah, I was just thinking as you were talking about, it was 100 years ago this year that there was a race riot in Danville, in which a black man who had been working on the railroad at the time was murdered. Just a gruesome, brutal murder, and it could have gotten worse but for the work of the sheriff in Vermilion County at the time, who courageously blocked the entrance to the jail where another black man was being held. The mob in Danville wanted to murder him as well, and the sheriff and his deputies stood out on the porch of the jail and stopped them. And the man was credited, the sheriff Harvey Whitlock was credited with avoiding a huge racial riot, that would have been much worse. And in fact, got a telegram from President Theodore Roosevelt congratulating him for his work.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I'm struck by, the stories of mob violence and vigilante, quote, justice. And there was at least one mob action that led to the death of a man accused of murder. And the Gazette commented, well, we don't condone this, but if ever there was a case where the circumstances justified the deed, this was it. What kind of stand did newspapers of the day take on vigilantism?
It's funny. They were all over the place. And in the Gazette, this was before the papers merged. I think you're talking about a case in the 1880s or 1890s in Piatt County where a man had murdered his wife and was being held in the jail, and a mob came into the jail and hung him in downtown Monticello. And you know, I think the paper was probably playing to its audience at that time and condoning this, because obviously there was great anger in Piatt County and East Central Illinois about this murder. So I suspect that if it happened here, they were for it, but if it happened 50 miles away, they were against it.
Mm. This is the Afternoon Magazine. This afternoon here on the program, we're talking about state and local stories. We're taking a look at our state's history and the history of East Central Illinois. Listeners, if you'd like to join us with a question, with a comment, give us a call. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, if it would be a long-distance call, use the toll-free number 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Two guests are with us this afternoon. Both have lifelong interest in the stories of our region. Newspaperman Tom Kasich is with me in the studio this afternoon, and retired teacher Stu Fleege joins us this afternoon by telephone from Springfield. Stu is the author of Tales and Trails of Illinois. Tom, the author of Hot Type, 150 Years of the Best Local Stories from the News Gazette. 333-9455, that's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, if it would be a long-distance call, use the toll-free number. That number good outside Champaign-Urbana, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. We have a listener waiting to talk with us on line one in Urbana. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I have a question for both of the authors. I'm not from here originally, so I have a lot of gaps in my knowledge base. But I went to a talk a while ago at the university, and they talked about something called sundown towns. And being from California in the Bay Area, I had never heard the term, although I gather sundown towns were across the country at one time. It has something to do with African Americans not being able to be in a town after a certain time. Do you guys know anything about that?
Yes. Just at the Illinois Conference in History, sponsored by the Illinois Historic Preservation Agency here in Springfield, the main speaker talked about sundown towns, and that you're correct. The idea was that some of these small towns, the racial hatred was so extreme that they did not want African Americans to be in town after sundown, quotation mark, sundown, and that's where the term comes from.
Okay.
It's not a nice story.
Oh, okay. But I could find out more about it if I...
And there are, according to the lecture the other day, there are still, to this day, some towns in existence in Illinois that practice that general... Of course, it's unofficial, of course.
Yeah.
But that's the mindset of some towns yet today in Illinois.
So basically they run them out of town at sundown?
Yes. If they were there, and most of them,
I wouldn't
hang around too long. Okay. Certain towns had that reputation, and it was pretty well known.
Were there any towns that you know of, like, just around here? I'm assuming Champaign-Urbana hopefully was not sundown town kind of situation.
Well, there are some. I don't want to malign any local cities in this day and age, but there were some here in central Illinois.
Yeah. Okay, so if I were interested in finding out more about that, I would... probably just go to the library and have somebody there help me with it.
Yes, I'm sure somebody at the library could kick up something with sundown. You might just want to kick it up on the internet.
Okay, I'll try that.
Sundown town.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks for the call. Also, to that listener, let me reintroduce the program here today. This is the Afternoon Magazine. We're talking about local, state and local history. 333-9455, the number to call in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free 800-222-9455. And to that caller who just called, I want to let her know that we have made an arrangement with the Urbana Free Library this afternoon. We've got a couple of librarians over there who said if we got stumped, we could give them a call, and they would call in with an answer to a question that we got stumped on. So that's terrific. So our thanks to the Urbana Free Library and librarians Mary Towner and Chris Williams, who are on the job over there this afternoon. So maybe we'll get some more information here from the library about sundown towns. We've got another call coming in here on the toll-free line in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm originally from Grundy County, west of Morris, Illinois, between the river and the I&M Canal. There was a cottonwood tree that was the tallest tree in Illinois. And that fell down in the early 90s. And I was wondering if either one of these gentlemen know what now is the tallest tree in Illinois and where it's located.
Hmm.
I do not know.
Well, that's probably another one for the librarians.
I can't help you there. I know it does change from time to time. We used to call it Department of Conservation. Now it's called the Department of Natural Resources. Keeps an official check on those things. You might want to check with them.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Stay tuned, and maybe we'll get an answer to that question as well. Back to this idea of sundown towns in this unfortunate, unattractive, ugly part of our history. Tom, the Klan was active in our little towns of Champaign and Urbana.
Yeah, it's surprising. Although the Ku Klux Klan was very big in the 20s, and especially big in Indiana, and I think it obviously moved into Illinois as well. But even here in this university town, this town we sort of think is progressive and open-minded and tolerant, the Klan operated very openly in the 20s and, in fact, operated its own theater in downtown Urbana for 4 or 5 years until it mysteriously burned down overnight in April of 1927, and they would parade through town, and they would have big rallies, and they even had a wedding at the Illinois Theater between two Klan members. It's pretty odd, but it quickly died out after around 1930.
Mm.
I did not know it was that prevalent over there in that part of the state. My association with the Ku Klux Klan is more in southern Illinois. Franklin, Williamson County during the gang wars down there and so on and so forth. But that's interesting that it was in the Champaign area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's talk with another listener. Caller on a cell phone, line one. Hi.
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon. I have a question about the early county system in Illinois, how they were established, because I'm in Edgar County, and I've seen some old maps where Edgar County extended all the way to Chicago and extended out west for quite a ways. Of course, Edgar County is the Paris, Kansas, Illinois area, and one of the guests know anything about that. I'll hang up. Thank you.
Well, all the county formation in the state of Illinois was helter-skelter. It came about, first of all, from the deep south, from Carroll on up. But you're right, some of these counties were enormously big. For example, at one point in time, if a person that lived in what is now the Chicago area wanted to get married, they were part of Fulton County. They had to travel all the way down to Rushville to get a marriage license if they wanted to do it legally. Sangamon County, for example, was broken up into numerous counties. Most of the counties were much bigger when they were formed and eventually broke up. Ford, Piatt, Edgar, over in that area, all were at one time part of larger counties. I'm not sure of the name or chronology there, but they were broken up from they were smaller portions of larger counties.
Yeah, most of East Central Illinois originally was part of Vermilion County, and in fact, there's another part of the county history where there were several attempts made to form counties out of existing counties, and we had one here shortly after Abraham Lincoln was assassinated. A group in Homer, which was forever jealous of the fact that Homer was not a county seat and Urbana was, decided to sort of create its own county. And they shaved off a portion of Champaign County and a portion of Vermilion County and created what would have been Lincoln County. And it went to a referendum and was soundly defeated. It passed in It passed in only one township, and that was Homer, surprisingly.
No.
But there were several other attempts made just like that to form, you know, counties out of existing counties. We might have had, if they'd been successful, we might have had 110 counties now instead of 102.
Yeah, let's talk with another caller. A listener out working in the fields this afternoon on a combine on a cell phone on line 4. Hi.
Yeah, I'm from Farmer City. I'm not there now. I'd always, just a sidelight about the Klan, I always heard that the Holy Trinity in Bloomington mysteriously burned down in the 20s, being a Catholic church, and that was apparently attributed to the Klan. But I was wondering, I've been trying to research around Farmer City, and I just haven't had much success of finding anything that ever happened there. I know there's Grand Village of the Kickapoo and the Fox Indians up by Saybrook, but is there anything that happened in around Farmer City? And I'll hang up and drive.
Okay.
Stu, I'm stumped. I mean,
well, not directly that I know of. He's right. The Kickapoo, the Miami, some of the other tribes that belong to the Illinois Nation were in that area. But I can't think of anything around the Farmer City. I do know some of the Kickapoo traveled up and down along Salt Creek. That might be fairly close to a Farmer City. But other than that, I can't help you.
Okay, let's talk with another listener caller on line 1 in Champaign. Hi.
Hi. A few years ago, I went to a restaurant down in Paris that used to be a mansion of some sort. And the story was that there was great Confederate support in that area, and that this house had been part of a large ranch that actually supplied beef to the Confederacy, and I couldn't figure out how that could happen. So my question is, first, was there a center of Confederate support over there, and then is that true?
Yeah, the Paris area and Charleston, all those areas they weren't Confederates, but they were Confederate sympathizers. And, in fact, there was a big shootout on the Coles County Courthouse lawn, I believe in 1864, in which some Union soldiers were killed by Confederate sympathizers. It was really the closest the Civil War came to at least Champaign County. I mean, in fact, that there was, you know, it was a gun battle. And these sympathizers escaped and were never prosecuted.
They were called Copperheads, weren't they?
Yeah, Copperheads,
yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
And were they actually able to supply beef to the Confederate Army? That was the story that they gave there. But
I'm not certain about that, but they did supply them with, I think, arms was pretty clearly and...
Oh.
And maybe
the story doesn't quite hang right from that area. It just doesn't seem right. I don't know that it's not true. I do know that in researching Tales and Trails, you have to be careful about some of these local legends, these mansions, et cetera, et cetera. The biggest false legends out there are houses on the Underground Railroad. I've seen houses that people claim are on the Underground Railroad built after the year 1900, for crying out loud. You know, it was long after there was a need for it. People tend to exaggerate. And you, as a researcher, you really have to be careful about some of those stories.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Well, it was, maybe, Stu, you could refresh our memories about how it was that Illinois entered, you know, became a state, entered the Union as a free state.
Oh, it was rough going.
Yeah.
The so-called black laws, even after Illinois was a state, were designed to keep blacks from entering the state of Illinois. But the Constitution of the state of Illinois clearly forbid slavery, except that, Article 5 or something like that, which allowed some slavery along the salt mines in southern Illinois. But it was a long, hard battle. And, of course, the Elijah Lovejoy story tells you that, you know, many, many Illinoisans, a lot of people in southern, in central Illinois came from the south, from Kentucky, Tennessee, South Carolina, North Carolina, and they had Southern sympathies as a part of their makeup. And the fight to keep Illinois free was not an easy one. In fact, it seemed almost for a while that part of Southern Illinois would break off from the rest of Illinois and support the Southern cause at the beginning of the Civil War. General John Logan was instrumental in seeing to it that that did not happen, but the sentiment was there, the mindset that was there. The people felt that strongly about slavery in southern Illinois.
Let's talk with another listener, caller in St. Joe on line 3. Hi.
Hi. I had a little insight on into the tallest tree, only in Champaign County, from what I understand. I lived on a farm in near Fisher, just south of Fisher, and was told when we bought the farm that I no longer live there, but was told when we bought the farm that it was a cottonwood, too, that is on a stream and is the tallest in Champaign County. So I thought I'd pass that along.
Okay. Thanks for the call this afternoon.
I think most of the tallest trees have been cottonwoods, haven't they? I'm pretty sure. Either cottonwoods or sycamores grow to be the biggest and tallest and largest.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank the listener for her call this afternoon, for joining the discussion. Next, we're going to talk to a listener in Champaign, Line 1. Hi.
Hi. I have a German and Italian ancestry, and my father came over to work in the coal mines, and I think it was in Clinton, Indiana. So my first question is that the Clinton that probably he worked in for coal mines?
Hmm.
Or is it Clinton, Illinois?
There are no coal mines in Clinton, Illinois, and never have been, so
no.
It's probably Indiana.
But along the Illinois border there, that eastern border, would there have been?
Yes, there are some. There are some today, are there not?
Right.
By the Vincennes area. And
it's still some in Vermilion County.
I'm not sure about Clinton, Indiana.
Uh-huh. And the other story I heard from my Italian grandmother was that in some town in the south, there were people, KKKs, I think, against Italians. And so the one time they were going to march through town, and my grandmother said that the Italian men went out on the street and sat on the curb with their rifles in their lap, and the KKK walked through one part of town and then just walked right on out.
here in Illinois is notorious for their bad treatment for the Italians. But to this day, here in Illinois still supports that they have their festivals, and it's basically Italian in nature. They were all coal miners down there. But if you want to read, the best book on that is Bloody Williamson County by a guy named Paul Engel, and he delves into how the Ku Klux Klan and other white prairie settlers hated the Irish and most of the foreign immigrants. They used to call them bohunks and that type of stuff.
That's right. The Klan was not as anti-African-American in the 20s and 30s as it was anti-immigrant, anti-Catholic. And in fact, I have a friend who you know, speak of legends, he insists his father or his grandfather was one of the people who burned down the Illinois Theater in Bannon. He was a Catholic.
Wow.
But that is a good point. They were more anti-foreigner than they were anti-African-American.
Well, my grandmother, Kelly, told this story about being in Indianapolis and the Klan marched down the street. And what she did was she turned her chair around to face the house, so she, you know, it was a statement against the Klan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yes, it was really more, you know, just a whole lot of hatred going on there. It's really ugly. Let's talk with another listener. We're going to go next to one of our librarians, Mary, at the Urbana Free Library, Line 4. What have you got to tell us this afternoon?
Well, I have a little bit to tell you about big trees.
Okay.
Illinois actually keeps a big tree registry of 130 native trees. This isn't online, though it can be ordered from the DNR, the Department of Natural Resources Clearinghouse. And if anyone's interested on the information on how to get it, they can call us at the library. But there is a guide to the big tree register. And I did find a site on the Internet from the Illinois Periodicals Online, which is part of Northern Illinois Digital Enterprise, where there's an article that says the tallest tree in the state is 165 foot northern, which is pretty exciting. That's really tall. But there are four trees that have national records, and the record trees are not based on heights. They're based on a variety of different points that make them special. One tree, which is a common hackberry, has a circumference of 249 inches and a height of 94 feet. And there are other trees that are equally large, but the tallest tree, which is the question the patron asked, was 165 feet.
When you said it was northern, a northern what?
Well, it just says 165 foot northern. which, you know, sort of leaves me hanging. I'm assuming it's a pine of some sort, but I'm not sure. We do not have a copy of the tree register here, but after today, we'll get one.
Okay.
I hope that helps get you started.
Okay, thanks for the information.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye. Next, we are going to talk with a listener in Eureka, line 3. Hi.
Hello. I have maybe a couple of questions. Can you give me the spelling of the author of Tales and Trails, and who is the publisher?
Okay. Tales and Trails of Illinois. The author is Stu Fliege, and his name is spelled F-L-I-E-G-E, published by the University of Illinois Press.
Okay. And the Gazette one. How do you spell Kasich, and who publishes his book?
Okay, Tom.
K-A-C-I-C-H. It's a good Croatian name. And it's published by Sports Publishing in Champaign.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks for the call this afternoon. Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Urbana, line 1. Hi.
Yes, hello. I want to commend your show and guests for talking so openly and frankly about the history here in the area. I was though startled about the comment that maybe I misheard it, that the Klan was actually more anti-Catholic and immigrant than anti-African-American, you know, in light of what is historical fact of hundreds of African-Americans being lynched by the Klan in the teens and the 20s and the 30s. I wanted to ask, are you guys talking about just in Illinois, or can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, Tom, you want to clarify?
Yeah, I was talking about the history here in Champaign County. And that they were when they did make public pronouncements, they were basically standing for patriotism and purity of race, what they meant here was that they were mostly against immigrants because the immigration, there were certainly more immigrants in Champaign County at the time than there were black people.
In Southern Illinois, there were very few black people, and they were definitely they were mainly 99% Protestant, and they did not want anything to do with the Catholic Church. It was out and out hatred.
Right. So in Illinois, central and southern Illinois, it was somewhat different than the South. That's the distinction you're making?
Well, when we talk about the southern states, but southern Illinois was...
Your southern states, yes.
Yes. In the southern states, of course, there was far too many lynchings of African Americans, and there were some in Illinois, but not to the extent that they were down south. The main hatred of the Ku Klux Klan was focused against the immigrants and the Catholic Church around the Heron area, Williamson, Franklin County.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, thanks for clarifying that.
Sure. Okay. Next, we're going to go to a listener in Park County, Indiana, line 4. Hi.
Yeah. Hello. I just happened to tune in. I have no idea what your topic is or anything, but the lady asked about Clinton, and she's thinking of Clinton, Indiana. They have an awful lot of Italians down there and Scots as well. They worked in the coal mines, and they even have a little Italy festival on Labor Day weekend down there. So that's surely what she's thinking about, Clinton, Indiana.
Okay. Thanks for the call this afternoon. This is The Afternoon Magazine. That's the name of the program. Today we're talking about state and local stories. We're talking about our history this afternoon. We have two guests with us here on the program this afternoon. Stu Fliege is a retired math and science teacher and the author of Tales and Trails of Illinois. Tom Kasich is the editorial page editor of the News Gazette. He's the author of Hot Type, 150 Years of the Best Local Stories from the News Gazette. Listeners, you can join us with your questions this afternoon here on the program. Give us a call. Talk to our guests. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. Let's talk a little bit, if we might, about this period of time of the 20s. The Roaring Twenties. It seems to me that they roared everywhere. Tom?
Yeah, I was. I always thought that if I had a chance to go back and live during another period of time, that I would like to have been here in the 20s and 30s as a journalist, because Champaign-Urbana was so much different than it is now in terms of lawlessness. I mean, there must have been a story every night. And it all began in 1907 when the towns became dry. They had prohibition here, you know, 12 years earlier than the rest of the country. So that immediately brought in an underworld, and there was sale of illegal alcohol, and there was prostitution, and even some drug abuse at that time, and there was just all sorts of mischief going on. And at the time, I'm sure it was difficult. You know, it was tough to live here, but as a reporter, you know, you would have wanted to cover stories like that. It was just so different. And, you know, people think that Chicago was wide open and had an underworld, but I think we had that in virtually every other town. I know it was in Springfield and Bloomington and Peoria and here. So.
And the gangsters went back and forth all over.
Yeah, all over. I mean, you know, there's stories. Every town in the Midwest, I think, has a story about where Al Capone used to hang out in their town. When it got hot in Chicago or Cicero.
Yeah. Stu, you want to add something?
Well, sure. Along the other lines, too, beginning in the late teens and through the 20s, there was a strong socialistic and even communistic efforts here in America, mainly dealing with the behind the scenes on the unions. You know, Eugene Debs, he was a great socialist, and almost 90% of it stemmed from worker unrest, the whole idea of capitalistic very wealthy capitalistic individuals making money on the poor backs of the labor. And those movements were very, very strong, much, much stronger than today. We don't hardly, you know, give much credence to any socialist or communistic movement. But in those days, in the late teens and the 20s, they were in the newspapers all the time, all over the place.
Yeah. Most dangerous woman in America.
Yeah. she supported
Mary Harris Jones.
That's right.
Mother Jones. Illinois.
Yes. They were there, okay.
Okay. Let's talk with another listener. Caller calling us back from the Combine, line one. Good afternoon.
No, I'm calling back from a tractor.
Okay.
I had a question about the University of Illinois. I've heard for a long time that the university could have been established over at Danville because they had Speaker of the House Cannon in Washington. And he offered them either the Veterans Home or the University of Illinois. And Danville chose the Veterans Home and Hospital over the university. And I'd like to hear if that's true or not. And thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Well, I don't think that's true. As I understand it, the competition for the University of Illinois was basically Jacksonville, Lincoln, and Bloomington. And that we had here, we in Urbana, had a great legislator named Clark Griggs, who virtually bought off the legislature at the time in 1867, and got the votes to put the university in Urbana.
Yeah, Uncle Joe Cannon, of course, he was very influential all over the place, but I don't know that he was associated with trying to get the U of I in Danville. The other thing is the competition for these universities and for some of the state institutions, the penal institutions, mental institutions, and also the county seats, the location of the county seats. The people in those days, I mean, they fought for those things vehemently. There was a lot of antagonism back and forth and a lot of efforts to get institutions and to get the county seats into their area.
Let's talk with another listener. Caller in line four, Terre Haute, Indiana. Good afternoon.
Hi. Thank you for having me on the show. I wanted to talk about a story that took place in a time period of the 1930s. In southern Vigo County, Indiana. During that time, there were several underground coal mines in that area. And there was an event in southern Vigo County at the Dixie B underground mine where there was a dispute between union miners and non-union miners, which resulted in several hundred union miners coming from all over the country taking hostages of non-union miners at the mine, killing some of them, and the National Guard being ordered by the governor to march to the mine with over 900 National Guard troops to break up the conflict. And that's a great story for this part of the country and is documented history with the Vigo County Historical Society, and would be a great story to to get out to people and also maybe for a reenactment.
Well, we could put it in Tales and Trails of Indiana.
There you go. Also, by the way, a caller called in to let us know that there are no coal mines left operating in Clinton, Indiana, but the town used to be called Coal Town. And there is a Coal Town Museum there in Clinton, Indiana. So thanks to the last caller here, and thanks to the caller who called in to tell us about the Coal Town Museum in Clinton, Indiana. Let's go and talk with another listener. Caller, I believe, on line 3, Champaign County. Is that you?
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, the KKK here and this idea that their ideology was definitely anti-black. I think that the problem was that the immigrants were coming in and being used to divide the working class as usual. So there's a film called Matawan by Sayles that isn't necessarily set in, I think it's set in Appalachia, but it's the same kind of, and I think Bloody Williamson County chronicles that. So they were certainly ideologically, you know, superior race, and they had all the trappings of, I think they lampooned blacks too, but what was really happening on the ground was this division and the immigrants were the ones that were taking the brunt of it. But I wanted to ask about Springfield. I understand there was a walking tour that was, this was from the Illinois Times. There was a major race riot in the aughts, in the 08, I think maybe it was. I'm not sure exactly about the date.
It was 1910.
Okay.
It was 08 or 10 or 12. It was in that time era.
Right. But
there are some plaques in downtown Springfield that you can follow to that record what happened at that particular corner or that particular site during that race riot.
The initial one is right where the Lincoln Museum is, and apparently I don't know if it's been restored yet. I was responding to an essay that was in the Illinois Times saying, where is the first plaque that gives the story and tells you where to go to the next one?
Well, so, you mean the building, the new museum, they've taken it down and it's probably not replaced yet.
Yeah, well, I understand that they're probably trying to find a way to put it in, and it's kind of it should be right up there in front. I mean, it should be the context.
Well, of course, that particular race riot was a really black mark on the hometown of Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
And it's not a nice story.
Well, also in the Lincoln Hotel in Springfield, you could not stay if you were African American.
Mm-hmm.
We're out of time. I want to thank the two of you very much for joining us this afternoon. It's been a lot of fun. Maybe we could do it again. I really enjoyed it.
It was fun.
Well, let's try it again.
Tom Kasich and Stu Fleege, our guests this afternoon in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. Stu, the author of Tales and Trails of Illinois, and Tom, the author of Hot Type, 150 Years of the Best Local Stories from the News Gazette. Our thanks to our librarians in Urbana at the Urbana Free Library who helped us out this afternoon, and to all those who called in this afternoon with questions and comments.